Welcome to the 8th season, oh my god, of the Pretty Deadly podcast. I'm Susie Colick, the founder of Pretty Deadly Self-Defense, a self-defense program for women I developed based on my experiences as a violent crime survivor and my 23 years of training in the Japanese art of ninjutsu. I'm going to dive right in, and in this episode, I want to go all the way back to the beginning and why I started Pretty Deadly in the first place. But before I go on, have you checked out our new website? It's amazing, if I do say so myself. One of the things I'm most excited about is our booking system that lets people book directly with certified self-defense trainers, and payments go directly to them. That may not seem like a big deal to you, but if you've ever managed a studio or a dojo with a bunch of independent trainers, you'll really appreciate how much easier it is to not have to deal with payouts. Anyway, check it out at prettydeadlyselfdefense.com. Back to our episode. So, I've talked before about why I started Pretty Deadly. What happened to me, the short version again, is many years ago, in the year 2000, actually, I was attacked in my home in the middle of the night. Some man I've never seen before broke in and tried to kill me. When the initial attack stopped and I calmed down a little bit and I was able to find the support that I needed with my friends and my family and through therapy, one of the questions I asked myself is, why didn't I learn self-defense before? Well, I'm a reasonably intelligent woman. I was 32 years old at that time. I had been out in the world on my own. I was well aware of the fact that women are vulnerable, things happen to us. So why didn't I learn self-defense? Especially if self-defense is marketed as preventing violence. When I started in martial arts in my dojo in Los Angeles, that was something that was still on my mind as I continued to train. My teacher offered a six-week self-defense course that was really intensive. And I think at that time I was a yellow belt, but I decided to take the course as well. And for me, it was pretty comfortable. We would have occasional go-rounds with one of the black belts, and he would put on a helmet with a black or a tinted visor so you couldn't actually see his face. And that was pretty disturbing. This was all part of my martial arts training, I felt. So again, for me, I felt pretty comfortable in it. But over the course of the class, our teacher would tell us a bunch of stories about why we needed to take self-defense. That yes, we have right to bodily autonomy. In an ideal world, we should be able to walk down the street naked with a mattress on our head and nothing should happen to us. But that's not the reality we live in. He told us stories about women who had been abducted, about women who had been killed, about all kinds of things, what we should and shouldn't be wearing. And this is pretty old school stuff. And I want to just, you know, have the caveat that I love and adore my sensei and always have and always will. But some of the things that he was telling us and some of the things he was teaching us didn't feel right. And I started to think like, well, you know, this is all a little bit harsh, and no wonder people don't really want to take self-defense. In our final class, we were doing like three rounds each person with random attacks against this one black belt who, by the way, kudos to that guy and the amazing amount of energy he had. Michael, if you are ever listening to this, hello and thank you for the training. I was ready for it, but again, I was training. I knew who the black belt was. I felt comfortable with it, but some of the other women didn't. They were now facing the thing that they feared most. And I remember there was one woman who broke down in tears and was literally crawling on her hands and knees to the front door of the dojo to avoid having to do this. So the atmosphere was so tense and so scary, kind of, you know, encouraging us, I know, with the best of intentions, but forcing us to face our deepest fears, that I feel like it had the reverse effect. I continued my training and I achieved my instructor's belt in 2008, and then I went to Chicago. I was actually going to move out of the United States at the time, but I was going to drop a bunch of stuff off with my family and spend the holidays with them before I moved to Europe. I ended up staying longer because I was there to help care for my mom in her final years. That's a different story. when I was in Chicago, I was staying with my younger brother who lived in kind of a hipster area called Wicker Park. When I happened to arrive, there was a rapist running around Wicker Park, and he was pretty violent and had the entire area scared. I did not know this, of course. I had driven across country, but I was walking to my brother's house just from the store or something one day, and a police officer gave me a flyer and said, there's a self-defense class happening at the community center here in the park. It's free. If you want to come, please join. And I thought, oh, great. You know, I get to meet some martial artists. So I went, and I didn't let anyone know that I had done any kind of training before. I really wanted to kind of just be like all the other women there and really absorb what was being taught. And these two guys, they are in Okinawan karate, Frank and Alex, were teaching the workshop. And again, these were people who later became friends, and I helped them open a dojo in Chicago, and I really enjoyed training with them and getting to know them. But that day, they were strangers. And they were teaching women techniques that were really, really difficult. Again, with the very best of intentions, these guys really cared about the community. I remember there was one technique, which in ninjutsu is called a motekote gyaku, and that's what we were teaching. It's a wrist lock or a wrist break. So we were all lined up in two rows, each woman facing a partner and having to practice this technique. This was something that was familiar to me, so I could do it. But the woman that I was training with couldn't do it. And she was trying and trying, and she, you know, she was ready to burst into tears. And she said, how come you can do it and I can't? And I said, well, I've been training in martial arts for a while, and this is actually a really, really difficult technique. It took me a long time to learn how to do this correctly. That gave her some relief, but the look on her face before that was one of such hopelessness that if she couldn't get this one technique, then this was the one thing she was going to need to save her life and save herself from being raped by this madman running around the neighborhood. She was so desperate to get it, and not being able to get it was crushing her. It was really, really frustrating to see. Now, the way that I was brought up in martial arts was in a much more traditional sense, in that I didn't do the right thing. I should have told them immediately that I trained in martial arts. But if you are in someone else's dojo or in someone else's workshop, you do not teach. You don't take over a class from another teacher, especially if they don't know who you are. It's incredibly rude. So I didn't want to teach her. I did show her a little bit to help because she was in so much distress.
I did talk.
That's what started my conversation with Frank and Alex later, and when we decided to start working together. Frank and Alex were pretty crucial to helping me create Pretty Deadly, as I've talked about this before, that I originally created it for my mom. But they gave me a platform and they gave me a lot of support. And once I was able to kind of use my mom as a guinea pig, we had a couple of really big workshops at the dojo that we had opened together. So again, Frank and Alex, if you're listening to this, thank you very much for teaching me and for giving me this platform and helping Pretty Deadly plant its very first seeds. Of course, my point is really about self-defense itself and why I created Pretty Deadly. So after going through my teacher self-defense training and training with Alex and Frank, I realized that the common belief from martial artists and people who teach self-defense is often, well, women just don't want to learn it. There's a problem with women. And often in the martial arts world, people are also saying like, oh, women are so powerful and they don't even know it. They're so good. It's such a pity that more women aren't in martial arts. The thing is women will also think like, there must be something wrong with me that I'm not learning self-defense. You know, why don't I want to do this thing that I know I should do? We tend to blame ourselves for a lot of things. And what we didn't realize, what I didn't realize until I took these other self-defense classes, that the problem wasn't with women. It wasn't with me. The problem was with the product. So a lot of self-defense teachers, especially when they're male, but often I've seen women do this too, who have not experienced violence firsthand. I'm very glad for that. But they have a tendency to kind of imagine scenarios. Men especially will imagine the kinds of things that women experience on a day-to-day basis, and it's very unrealistic. There's a video that I saw on social media of some, I think they're BJJ guys in Florida or something, and they're showing a self-defense against an attack, which is a man approaching a smaller woman and picking her up and throwing her over his shoulder, which is not realistic. Why a woman would stand there while a guy is approaching her to pick her up is a little bit beyond me, but also it's just sort of a caveman fantasy of the things that we actually experience in real life. One of the things that I've discovered teaching Pretty Deadly and as I was developing the program is that we can craft a self-defense program that is general because we don't really know what's going to happen. We don't really know how an attacker is going to behave in any situation. We can assume that an attacker has a modus operandi, right? Ways, habits, and things that he does over and over again, but we don't actually know what those are. But we can focus self-defense training on the movements that the user, the woman or the person who's taking the course, is learning and make sure that they understand what the good structure is, how to move from center to put more power behind things, how to complete a movement all the way to make sure that it has maximum power, how to make a connection, how to judge distance, how to use all these things where we're not focused so much on how it affects the other guy, but more about how are we moving? Are we moving thoroughly? Are we moving in a reliable, powerful, steadfast way? Or are we focusing on the end result? I want to get that guy on the ground, no matter how it comes out. What I found teaching Pretty Deadly over the years, and as I've been training trainers, is that it can be a bit of a bridge for people that has to be crossed, where we don't focus on targets and we don't focus on end results, but we only focus on how it feels inside our body. Does it feel like I am steady? Does it feel like I am strong? Does it feel like I am moving from my center? And that's the kind of training, though, that I think is a kind of more sensitive training to focus on when we're teaching self-defense to people, because it helps us learn to trust the movements that we're learning. It helps us become confident in the way that we move, because it's a faster way of learning muscle memory than just endless repetition. When we focus on end results, like throwing somebody to the ground, we're not focused on what else is happening around us. And of course, in a real life situation, things can change in the blink of an eye. Real life situations are very chaotic. Nobody is actually in control. And I think that's something that is a good thing to convey to your self-defense clients, that it seems like the other guy's in control, but actually, the minute he initiates an attack, he's no longer in control. Neither are you, because he doesn't know how you're going to respond, just like you don't know exactly how he's going to attack. But when we understand how these movements work within our body, when we know that we've got a full set of tools that we can rely on, and they're going to come out whether we're thinking about it or not, they're just going to be reactive. But we know that they're powerful. We know that we can complete a movement all the way through, whether we make a connection or not, regardless of the effect it has on somebody else. That, I think, is where the real power of self-defense comes in. One of the people that we certified as a self-defense trainer in 2022 is a personal trainer and art curator and fitness model named Natalie. Natalie is based here in Berlin normally, but she travels around a lot. She's originally from Switzerland. She speaks like 7 languages or something. And she was recently on a trip in the Canary Islands to get warm, I presume, because it's cold here in Berlin. And I'm going to let Natalie tell her story of how her training stepped in for her when she needed it.
Hey, guys. This is super random, I'm sorry, still shaking. Basically, I just got harassed on the street here in Spain by a man who approached me from behind with his bicycle. I was having my headphones on, so I didn't hear him coming. So this guy stops, asked me for the time in Spanish, and since he already scared me so much by stopping so close to me, I was super frightened and I told him the time in English. And this guy goes, no te entiendo, like I don't understand, like super aggressively. So to get him away, I just wanted to show him the time on my watch. And then he basically took my arm, grabbed it, squeezed it super hard, and pulled me towards him. And I'm just making this story because having made this self-defense education as a trainer, but also obviously as a normal person who knows some self-defense techniques, fortunately my first reflex was to push that guy away with my elbow super hard, and I started to scream in Italian, English, all the languages just came super loud to frighten him, and fortunately it worked. He pissed off, and then I took my phone, I took pictures of him, I screamed to him, turn around, you fucking motherfucker, because I'm taking pictures, which obviously he didn't do, but this was to frighten him even more, because I was afraid that he would come back, because it was an area with hardly any people around, and it worked. So I made it to the gym safely, but I'm still shaking, and my heart is racing, and the first thing I did here, I met the owner of the gym a couple of days ago, and I showed him the pictures of this guy that I took, and I asked him if he knows him, if I see him. Fortunately, it's not the case, but this is just to tell you guys, you ladies especially, do a self-defense class. I will link the program which I did, and where I'm also a self-defense trainer myself, and learn how to defend yourself both verbally and physically, and talk about it immediately, over and out.
You have been listening to the Pretty Deadly Podcast. You can learn more about who we are and what we do, and how to find a Pretty Deadly course near you by visiting our website at prettydeadlyselfdefense.com. And if you're a fitness or martial arts pro and you'd like to enhance your instructor skills, our certification programs are open for enrollment, and you can find them on our website at prettydeadlypro.com. This podcast is produced by Singe Network for Pretty Deadly, recorded in Berlin, and our original music is the track Icarus Wish by Berlin band Dead Centuries, used with permission from the artists.